there was a lot of anxiety in Asia and other parts of the world amongst garment exporting countries that the MFA quotas, the multi-fiber arrangement export quotas, were about to expire in 2005. So at that time, I started working on a lot of programming around how to address these issues. There was a lot of pessimism that all these countries were going to really drastically lose market share, and then what was going to happen after that. But it wasn't until about 5 years ago that the idea for the book really came about. And so I've been involved with working on these issues. I've been going to the region and talking to people in the sector, seeing how the sector had developed and evolved. And about 5 years ago, it seemed like an interesting sort of question of how certain countries seem to have survived. There was a big shift in terms of thinking about issues like labor rights, and that's when it started. You know, there was a lot of changes taking place in these countries, and there was a lot more dialogue.
Let's go back a little bit to that multi-fiber arrangement and what it meant to these countries and the textile industry there. How did it help them? How did it hurt them? And what did the expiration of this mean to them?
The idea was that they were going to just sort of flood the market. So the quotas were there to sort of keep them in check. Now, what happened is in countries like Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Cambodia, all the three countries that I look at in the book, they created sort of haphazard growth in some sense of the sector. Because the quotas were in place, they guaranteed market share. There was very little desire to actually look at issues of labor rights or how to actually improve products. It was basically they just did the minimum needed to continue their share of the market. As suppliers started going to these countries and as they realized that there was abundant cheap labor, that actually added a lot of pressure to the system. And now that's actually what we see, kind of the ramifications of the MFA quotas now, even though they're expired. A lot of the disasters that we see in Bangladesh are due to this haphazard growth and sort of this lack of planning of the sector.
Your book goes into the emergence of coalitions and how the industry developed beyond 2005 and the ending of this agreement. And talk a little bit about these coalitions and how they came about.
The book really tries to look at the industry kind of beyond the headlines. And so I actually argue that in Bangladesh, which is always in the news for very negative aspects of the sector, actually has been taking a lead and has been successful in creating these coalitions of the various groups and stakeholders who are part of the industry. So at one time, it used to be very close relationships between the private sector and the government. Now the role of labor has really emerged as an important player in the coalition. And there's been various channels to use to represent the role of labor. So, for example, in Bangladesh, there are garment federations in place. There are informal sort of ways that garment factory owners are dealing with various labor groups. There also, the role of buyers has really changed. They, at one time, just used to come and only deal with sourcing issues. Now they are actually, in many cases, advocating for improved labor rights. And we see this in varying degrees in the three countries that I look at. I sort of argue that Bangladesh has actually progressed further than the other two countries in terms of creating these stronger coalitions. There are stronger communication channels in place. Sri Lanka and Cambodia, actually, they also have certain channels, and there is an increased role of labor, but it's also limited due to other factors.
Bangladesh, Cambodia, Sri Lanka, do the nations interact as far as working on the trade and textile industry, or have they come up kind of individually on their own?
I think it's really more individually on their own. Each country over the years have developed their own niche. Bangladesh focuses really on basic t-shirts and, you know, really sort of basic goods, whereas Sri Lanka is much of more of a higher end player. Their products would have much more intricate beading and lace and other kinds of things that would require more detail. There's a clear difference in sort of the types of products they would produce. They've kind of specialized in some sense over the years.
What were some of the issues that you found rather interesting, perhaps surprising during your research that you may have been aware of, but really didn't know the details about until you got into it?
Well, there were a couple things, I mean, that really came out. As I was doing this research, one of the things that really struck me was that the idea of improved labor conditions and worker empowerment are actually two separate things. And going into the research, I sort of had certain amount of preconceived notions, as we all do. I really expected to find in Bangladesh, you know, I knew that the conditions were not as good as the other two countries. And so I kind of expected the level of worker empowerment, when you're looking at sort of workers mobilizing, to be not as much or really at the beginning stages. But in contrast, Sri Lanka and Cambodia are both sort of touted and marketed as countries with improved labor standards. Ironically, as I was doing the research, I found that in Sri Lanka and Cambodia, while the conditions are better than compared to Bangladesh, the workers tended to be really not participating in any of the decisions, or there were fewer channels or fewer sustainable channels to get the workers to be able to make significant changes both at the factory and national level. Whereas in Bangladesh, although it's been much slower, there's been significant channels for workers to have a say, both in the national level policymaking and in factory improvements. And I sort of argued that this is actually a more sustainable in the long run. The other very interesting finding that I also didn't expect was both in Cambodia and Sri Lanka, the marketing of these countries as improved labor conditions or good labor conditions really stem from very top-down types of programs, so that the governments are embarking on. But these actually may initially be effective in improving the basic standards, but they actually don't help in furthering these labor coalitions that I'm discussing in the book. And in fact, it becomes almost used to leave labor out, because through these top-down programs, they very much, in a lot of the interviews, this sort of came up, that labor groups don't really need any other channels to express their concerns, or they don't need to be actively involved in policymaking because, well, their conditions are much better. So why do they need to be involved? So that was actually a really unexpected finding.